Good morning. I just want to start off with recognizing three people in the audience. Jamie Rock, who's the advanced practice nurse, who's over the program that I'm going to speak about, and Vivian Geddes, technical assistants, actually write the SAMHSA grant, which I'm going to also talk about, and my big sister. Since it's a small group, we can be a little down home here. So anyway, thank you for coming to my talk. I was surprised how few presentations on this topic were at the APHA because it's really taken over the American Psychiatric Association meetings and the National Council for Community Behavioral Health Care. And the focus of my presentation is going to be the issue of physical health for people who have serious mental illness. And I have some slides. I'm going to go very quickly so I can get to kind of the take-home message. So everything has been loaded, so please feel free to go and get it yourself. But we started looking at this problem. First of all, I am the executive director over a program that serves seven parishes or counties in Louisiana. Baton Rouge is the largest parish that we serve. We serve over 9,000 people a year. Most of them are low socioeconomic, and we do mental health, addictive disorders, and developmental disabilities. One of the things that really caught my attention when I first came to this agency, I came from a private sector, was that we saw very few people over 50 years old. And I kept on asking people, well, where are they going? They've been with our clinics for such a long time. There aren't other providers that are interested or willing to see them, and they're just not here. So it kind of remained a question that was out there for a long time. And at the same time, we were looking at the health problems of people that were coming to us, even though we're not the people that are responsible for overseeing that. It was really becoming quite increasingly disconcerting. We moved to a tobacco-free campus policy back in 2004. That included our inpatient substance abuse treatment center, and we've been very successful with that. After 2005, the physical health needs of people with mental illness became more and more apparent, as a lot of the evacuees who came up, their needs really focused more on their physical health needs than the mental health. And I know all of the mental health people really love getting into the disaster behavioral health thing, but it really was their physical health needs. And that's what really disproportionately brought them into the emergency departments. Everyone was concerned the EDs were filling up, about a 35% increase, with people who had emotional problems, but they were going for their physical health needs. And so we really had to work with the physicians and say, they're here for their physical health needs. Is that okay? Will you treat them? Please, you know, pay attention. They may have a mental illness, but they're sick people. In 2006, the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors came out with a really incredible document. For us, we had been kind of involved with Katrina relief for so long that when it came out, it was startling. And what it identified is that people with serious mental illness die on average 25 to 30 years earlier than their age cohorts. And that's exactly what we started to look at, and we're seeing the average age for a female at death would be 59 years old, and for a male at 53. And that this is not attributed to suicide, which is usually what people think of first thing, but it's because of their chronic illnesses. The kinds of things that people would get diagnosed in their 50s and 60s and go on to live another 20 years, hopefully. People are not being diagnosed who have serious mental illness, or by the time they are, they have all the most serious symptoms and things of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, things that I would say and our physicians that we work with would say are well beyond a primary care office to handle. When we looked in terms of I'm not going to go into all of this stuff, but I will just go on to say with the Affordable Care Act, they did identify that mental illness is one of the areas that causes people to have health disparities. I have a slide that will show it later. Because we're at the APHA, I wanted to include these slides. This was my research. It is a little bit more expanded than what you typically see because I did look in a lot of different sectors. But why are people dying who have serious mental illness so much earlier? And so these are the areas: systems and practice, the ability to navigate a very complex system, The client's lifestyle and tobacco, which we identified early on, the mentally ill account for about 44% of the tobacco industry in this country. And so just because they're mentally ill is not a vaccination that they're not going to have respiratory problems and lung cancer. And we've got to keep in mind that although in the past you'd always think of a mental health center and addiction center of people standing outside the door smoking, that that's something that we need to take as a public health issue and really address that. The biological predisposition, that's in a small number of diagnoses, had been identified back at least 20 years ago. But the most important one, I feel, is iatrogenic, and that's with a lot of atypicals that we're using now, which we know increases their chances for metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and hypertension. So our mission statement went from just being a public mental health, addictions, and developmental disabilities to include physical health. That I really, really kind of got a lot of support from my physicians and nurses to say, yes, we want this. We want this to be one of our responsibilities. So although we're not funded to do so, that we feel that it's really our moral obligation to do it. My board supported that. So again, my clients, we see about 9,000 people a year in our clinics, low socioeconomic, or underinsured, and lack an engagement with a primary care provider. So we had started using this tool on us. How engaged are you? And I'm not going to go into it, but we found that about 21% of the people that see us have no engagement at all. We were able to receive a grant after Katrina through the American Red Cross, and we had an on-site mobile clinic come to our largest mental health center. And these are the physical health problems that we identified. A serious problem with undiagnosed hypertension, elevated triglycerides, and hyperglycemia. When we looked at how many co-occurring physical ailments people had, you can see here that we found about 41% of our clients had four or more comorbid conditions along with their mental illness. If you look at the literature, it's typically cited at 38%, so we were really on target there. We had the opportunity, again, with the Red Cross grant to provide primary care on site with an advanced practice nurse through the mobile clinic, and also we used case managers to link people with a medical home. And what you can see is that the seriously mentally ill really did show up for their appointments, and that was a big selling point to local doctors who are willing to work with us, because the general public doesn't show up at this high of a rate. So you can see we had motivated clients, and we worked around the barriers of transportation and navigation for them. And here's what I mentioned before last summer. The National Prevention Council identified mental health as a health disparity group. Some of you may be aware or may not, but along with this came the SAMHSA put out an RFP that was to look at primary care, primary behavioral health care integration, and these were the areas that they were looking for, really to identify what's the model that will really impact the health and length of life for people with serious mental illness. And their outcomes, really the bottom line was, are people healthier with the models? So we applied, Vivian did a great job, and initially we weren't funded, but we did end up being in the fourth cohort. There are 64 sites across the country now that are following this type of process to identify the best model, and that we are working together to compare notes with the different types of models. Screening referral, we use an RN case manager, which has been very effective. In the past, we used social worker case managers. That was a slightly different use. They were allowed to do brief interventions to provide mental health counseling. This is much more focused on serious, on their physical health needs. The data elements that are required, you can see mechanical indicators, blood pressure, weight, height, BMI, waist circumference, blood labs, service outcomes, how many are enrolled, screened, that type of thing, and then descriptive information about the person and their personal and family history. The flow is that people voluntarily agree to become part of the grant program. We call it Total Health. And we enroll them on site at our mental health clinics and in our satellites. We work with local providers and find a medical home, not just a place to go for a sore throat, but an ongoing relationship with a primary care or other provider. And those are, again, through nurse care managers. the clinic infrastructure. I don't have time to really talk about this, but we did end up bringing in a phlebotomist so that we could save time on getting the blood value data, since we have to report that quarterly. And in, to be able to enroll the client, we need blood values within 7 days of enrollment. The places that we make referrals to for a home for people who are mostly indigent, you can see here, we don't have a whole lot of choice, and I would love to talk to any of you that represent an FQHC that's willing to take a referral of an indigent client, because we're not having any luck with that. We do have LSU, Louisiana State University. Their clinic program has been a great partner for us. They provide specialists as well, so it really got us beyond just the need for a primary care home. So the lessons learned, do I have a minute or two?
Yep, 2.
Oh, good, 2. So, the take-home message, really, really got to keep this in mind, because the whole movement is talking about primary care. The take-home message is that people who have had a serious mental illness for a good portion of their life, they are sicker, and they need access to specialists. Identifying a primary care provider and them then not having anyone they can refer to for specialty treatment doesn't really get the person where they need to go. The seriously mentally ill client requires and responds very well to case management, as you saw, even better than a general population without a disability. In our community, we feel that positioning our clinics as a specialty clinic, the mental health clinic, as opposed to bringing a primary care provider on site, was the way to go. And that if you find someone who's willing to see someone for an episodic use, it really does not impact their overall health, but it does help them get through their that brief time. ROSC is a very important thing, recovery-oriented system of care. Those of you who work with people who have a disability, we felt very strongly against bringing primary care into the specialty mental health center, because it means that person no longer has a choice of who their physical health provider will be. And I'm really concerned that the country is really moving towards that. Anyway, I guess I'm going
to
go.
I'll give you a few seconds to wrap up, and we'll get to your questions then.
I think that
you're good?
Let's go to questions.
Okay. Did anybody have questions for this wonderful presenter? Yes.
Right. Absolutely. That was when I started to see the data coming out from Medicaid. I thought this is really where we need to be looking. But it was so interesting, because I was asked to give a talk. What is it? Judy, what's the group that I talked about for Once You're 50? Right. AARP had actually asked me to come and give a talk in New Orleans about people who are older who have mental illness. And I said, well, that's a group that we don't see. Remember the beginning? And I said, unfortunately, I don't think they're around to be seen. But what was so fabulous about being part of that panel is that all of the same things that prevent the elderly from getting the care that they need, the physical health care they need, were the exact same things that our clients identified, either not having an ability to pay for it or not understanding that they can pay for it, fear of going and finding out that they have something really bad, and both fear for what's the financial impact, but also what's the chance of me getting something really wrong identified with me. But of course, transportation. And so a lot of these underlying things that really are outside of their mental health problem are what is preventing people from getting the care that they need.
Any other questions? Otherwise, I've got one.
Okay.
When your nurses, are they going doing home visits and doing the screening?
No, these are actually clinic-based.
Clinic-based, okay. Right. All right. Any other questions for our presenter? If not, then thank you so
thank
much.
You.
And thank you for supporting your sister.